You won't take this from me, baby. You will not take this from me, baby. You know, my niggas. Some niggas that you don't wanna try,
my niggas.
Some niggas just really do or die,
my niggas.
We'll have you cowards ready to cry,
my niggas.
We'll fry,
my niggas.
We'll rob,
my niggas.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Too Much Movie. This is a podcast where we discuss films that are simply too much. And you do not have to worry about Rob Belushi. He does not get strokes, motherfucker. He gives them. And Chris Candy, who has 21 ex-wives and seven of them liked him. Hello, gentlemen. It is so good to talk to you about 1999's masterpiece from Oliver Stone, Any Given Sunday. I would argue, hands down, outside of When We Were Kings, the documentary about Rumble in the Jungle, is the best sports movie ever. At me, fight me. It's the greatest sports movie of all time.
For these men, given up my wife, my children for these men. I've given up everything I have for these men. Game is all that matters to me, because it's pure, it's safe. Life isn't.
Any given Sunday, a legend will fall.
I need you to lead this team.
Tell me I'll be there for you.
I am not re-signing a $7 million a year, 39-year-old quarterback, no matter how great he was.
Cap helped build this franchise, which you benefited from.
Don't you give up on me.
You're like a son to me, Cap. I'll fight for you till the day I die.
Any given Sunday, a hero will rise.
Make me a believer!
And on any given Sunday... tradition will be broken.
He's changing the plays. Just does what he likes.
You run the plays, I call.
I've been warming the bench the whole time I've been in the pros. I don't plan on going back. I am QB. You're king in your own mind.
He may sell a lot of t-shirts, this kid, but he's tearing this team apart.
Well, then you hold it together.
Knock it off.
Why the hell do you think my father put me in charge, of bullheaded moron? You got old. No intensity. No victory. Where the hell is your intensity, Tony?
Any given Sunday, life is a contact sport.
Rob, talk to me about this movie.
I can't believe you picked that quotation from Jim Brown, because that's what I was leading with. I don't get strokes, motherfucker. Well, I give them. It's a tie for me for best sports movie of all time with Warrior.
Love Warrior too. Good movie.
That one just makes me bawl like a baby, but this one is, I mean, this came out the summer I graduated high school, and it was like, you know, his string of Natural Born Killers. It was like Oliver Stone, just really JFK. Like, he was killing it, man. And, I loved it. I feel like you get all of the Oliver Stone, like pastiche, but it's focused, you know, like, he's got his head in the game, as so to speak. And it's so fun, it's so funny, it's so like dirty and nasty and bloody and sexy and intense, but it just paints a great picture of how this game, this industry, touches people in a just a high stakes way, you know. And I'm with you. I mean, definitely Best football. The thing that I never realized before is Latimer from The Program shows up as like another weird, you know, like death metal defensive lineman in this. But we have a Any Given Sunday first timer in the crew.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Any Given Candy over here.
Any Given Candy.
I was a first timer to see this, and I remember I tried to watch this with my girlfriend like a year ago, and our upstairs new neighbor ruined the whole experience. And so now we are in an upstairs neighborless place. So I was able to fully dive into it. And this movie was fucking bonkers. Like, again, I was watching this and had the same thought from when I watched Last Boy Scout, and I was going, oh, I'm going to love this movie. And it was fully that. I think that this movie is like Heat, a sport. If Heat was a sports movie, this is what it would be. It feels very Michael Manny at times for me. I think you just get all of these like amazing performances from all these actors. But to your point too, it is a refined and like boiled down Oliver Stone film. It gets a little weird at some point. It gets a little with, you know, some of the
he's got his like Native American weird cutaways to like it always just when he cuts to the stands and it's all those like subtly racist. It's just white people watching. You know what I mean? Like, why are we cutting out these white people and talking about? I don't know, but I interrupt you, Chris. Keep going.
Well, yeah, like, you know, I think my main takeaway from this whole movie is similar to certain sports movies, but it's really like Oliver Stone's commentary on the sports industry, specifically football, the owners all the way down to the players, who's really calling the shots, who's the one who's really in charge. And it just goes through the whole film where you're like kind of wondering who really, you know, who's the king of this team, you know, is it Cameron Diaz? Is it Pacino? You know, is it Dennis Quaid? Is it Jamie Foxx? Who are the people in line? And I fucking loved it. I just was fully enthralled in it. And I do remember as I was watching the middle of it, the alligator scene. Wait, I was like,
throws him into the shower.
I totally like that. Yeah. That's what I remember. I remember that from the trailer. And I remember being like, oh, this is going to be good. but this movie is perfect.
It's interesting what you're saying about Oliver Stone coming in. Because much like JFK, essentially, is talking about the military industrial complex.
Yeah.
Like Any Given Sunday, he's really talking about the sports industrial complex.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
And I think in that mode, the film is its most successful talking about the business and the cultural implications. Very prescient. I think on like a more modern rewatch, which I'm sure we'll get into a bit later, you know, where it really kind of drags is there's just, and I know it's football and testosterone and intensity, but like the misogyny is like a little cringy on this watch. Yeah. You know, like, yeah. I think when we all watched in 1999, we were like,
do you think that we were just not like jiving with, cause I feel like this whole movie is like deeply critical. At the same time, like it has its cake and eats it too, of like being so loving of the sport, but like every part of it, you can read it as this is barbaric, this is psychotic, this is sadomasochistic, right. And it's also deeply awesome on every conceivable level. It's like, oh, this is like wish fulfillment and that weird perverted wish of like what America desires and like capitalism at its very worst. And I feel like that with the misogyny, it's just like, especially Cameron Diaz's character, like the most hilarious bit of casting. I know it seems like weird now, but it's like Charlton Heston as the league owner is the best fucking piece of casting. And when he's just like, you, that guy, because of all the history that we have associated with him, both in and out of movies, and you see him and you're like, this guy has done a thousand times more awful things than Cameron Diaz is like trying to get a better deal for her team than
right.
He's done 10,000 times worse. And he's like, just because she's a young woman, just because she's hungry, just because she's trying to disrupt, he's like, I genuinely think that woman would eat her young, you know, like, and you're like,
yeah. which is the most in those terms is the most, degrading thing you can say about his view of a woman. Like,
yes,
she doesn't belong here. She belongs either drunk like her mother, Angie Dickinson, who I love.
Love her.
She's like the freest bird of them all because she's
and Margaret, she's and Margaret, and Margaret.
And Margaret.
And Margaret. Yeah. And Margaret. Yes. And Margaret. I'm so sorry. And Margaret. I had Rio Bravo in my head for a second. Wait, am I confused? Is that Angie Dickinson?
Angie Dickinson is Rio.
Yeah.
Right. And Margaret.
And Margaret's there.
But she's a rage. She's like, she's a disconnected, you know, spirit essentially.
Yeah.
And he says she would eat her young. It's like, she doesn't belong here. She's not to be reckoned with. She's not a serious person. She's a girl. And not only is she a girl, she's an unapologetic and direct girl. And then it's even further developed. Like, her father wanted a son and what we got was her. And it's like, this fucking woman is
She's amazing.
She has
it's Cameron Diaz's best performance.
Yeah, by really is.
Light years. By light years. She's fucking amazing in this movie.
Yeah.
I love it. I love her. And like on this rewatch, that's the thing that really became focused to me. And I think in terms of Cake and Eating It too, like, I think Stone does such a deft touch with having empathy for a lot of different points of view, especially on the medical level, the family level, the glory level that you're talking about, but also what that glory means. Don't drop me, guys. I'm worth $1 million.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not just that great monologue in the steam room that Lawrence Taylor gives, but also the fact that he's got four kids and he needs the fucking money. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like,
and the fact that it's Lawrence Taylor.
That part is crazy. Yeah.
That, like, this is LT, babe. Like, it's like Jim Brown, Lawrence Taylor. There's like football characters, real life people, like, who have actually lived and breathed this life that permeate through everything that's happening here. It's so amazing that they're all there. Like, you've got these phenomenal actors as well. Like, you've got, you know, prior to Full Psycho, like, James Woods in here, like, just giving it, like, throwing 100 miles an hour with every single word that he says.
Look, there is nothing more aggravating to me than watching old movies where James Woods is great.
I know, it's so fucking annoying. Yeah, it's insane.
So he's so great now. He's so great. Like, he's the guy. I love his fucking speech. God damn it. Who am I to tell these guys they can't be great, you know?
Yeah. I love little lines from Woods as well, where someone's like, Cherubini's out. He's like, Cherubini? What, he fall off the bench?
Like, yeah. He's just like, comes back. He has like that whole line when at the very beginning of the movie when he's talking with Modine about, like, what, you know, if it's a bladder infection or, you know, intestinal problems, it's you. If it's anything
shit,
to do with
you,
bones, or,
shit you, yeah. Bones. Me.
Yeah, me. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know we're going to get into this whole thing, but I just, to that point, I think, like, as I was thinking about it and you guys were just talking right now, this movie is, again, like, it is very similar to JFK. It is all about ego. It's all about, and one of the things, as I was watching it and watching all of these actors just perform like maniacs, you know, on this field of being warriors on the football field, it just reminded me of that, like, the ego driven self of a lot of these performers, and just like how they have to bring it to the table to get these people to inflate, and how fun it must have been to play these characters and just, like, you know, bring them all to life, because you can't be like weak with this. You really have to bring the strength to all of these parts, and everybody does it in such a cool way. So yeah,
that's a great point.
I love it.
Can we say that it's in the Hall of Fame of movies where guys are just hanging dong for, like, absolutely no reason as well? Like, when
that dude's dick is so big, dude. I was like, That is the biggest fucking dick. Like, it's like pillow book dick.
Yeah.
It's shame dick. You know what I'm saying? Like, just rando in a locker room, you know?
Yeah.
God damn it.
It's, but I want to, from hanging dong to like, you know, someone said to me one day that Dennis Quaid was poor man's Harrison Ford. I've never been able to get it out of my head. I'm just like, oh my God, that's so funny. But like, there's scenes in this movie that just pop up into my mind all the time. And it's like, you talk about like ego, you talk about like capitalist drive, sports industrial complex. Like, you also talk about like house systems. You know, there's like that great Chappelle joke where he talks about like systems, like systems only happen because people benefit from like participating in the system. And I remember, because, you know, it's easy to go, it's misogynistic, et cetera, and like women play a role and whatever. But like the scene that fucking lights my fire every time I think about this movie is Captain Jack Rooney is completely messed up after that shot that he's taken. And he's got like discs all fused and messed up in his back and his whatever. And his wife, played by Lauren Holly, is there. And she's like, no, you're a goddamn quarterback. Like,
yeah.
Like, she exists in this system. I'm top of the hierarchy. I'm not changing my life status, etc., because you want to be a pussy. Like, that whole thing of like their self-perpetuating system is creating these toxic relationships no matter what.
What I'm saying is, I've got my rings. We took care of our money, and the kids are all right, and we've had a good run. I just think that it's time for me to get out after this season.
And do what?
Well, I talked to a guy over at one of the networks.
You are looking for somebody. Player.
Yeah. Yeah. Will you hear me out? Okay.
You're a football player, Jack, and you have 2 or 3 years left in you.
Cindy, you are missing the big picture here.
There is no big picture here, Jack. You're the goddamn quarterback for the Miami Sharks.
Are you listening to anything you're saying?
You're a legend, and you're talking about quitting.
Look, all my life, everybody's been telling me what to do ever since college. This is not your decision. It is my decision.
I will not listen to this bullshit from you. I will not.
Right. It's one of the scenes, like, since I was younger, I always think about it. It's that shark scene. It's the James Woods scene.
Yes.
And it's her slapping her husband in the face.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
saying, you're a football player. You know, you're a quarterback. And it's so interesting because, like, it's
very clear. Do you imagine that Giselle was slapping Tom Brady when he announced his first retirement? You're a goddamn football player, Tom.
I think like, what are you doing playing football? You're going to get hurt. But it's interesting, like, what keeps him great is definitely, it's part of it is this relationship and the dynamic of her being alienated because of her partner's status change is a strong one, but it's also like the dynamics of a marriage I thought were really interesting in there. And, you know, he goes to, you can see that he needs the validation as much as he's a leader because he gets it from Tony. And it's clear that he used to get it from his wife. And frankly, Dennis Quaid is this to me is the only worse image of 38 years old since Night Moves, when they say Gene Hackman is 38 Night Moves and they say Dennis Quaid is 38. I'm like, try fucking 48. But but he's fantastic when he's like saying gee whiz in the huddle. And like this conversation about the difference in terms of tone and race and youth and age at the quarterback position in 1999 is, you know, finally the fruit is finally bearing 25 years later. And you know, the die has been cast, but like they did not want to move on from this Captain Jack Rooney person behind the wheel to the detriment of the Chicago Bears 3 decades playing fucking football to our chagrin. You know what I mean? He's fantastic. He's great in it, Dennis Quaid.
Yeah. And it's interesting you bring that up in like regards to Quaid. Like this movie feels like, I wrote this down, like this is the end of an era and the beginning of an era for filmmaking. Yes. Like you can really see the passing of the torch in regards to where we're going and where we're leaving.
Yes.
Felt like a lot of 90s movies. This is like right on the cusp for us guys. You know, this is right there because you're about to enter.
It's in the movie year. It's in what is argued as the greatest movie year of all time, 1999. Like, and part of the reason I was so excited to talk to you guys about it is because it's not one of the ones that gets mentioned in 99, but I'm like, guys, this is just as 99 as everything else. Like, it's handing over to Jamie Foxx and Cameron Diaz, and all these massive people are getting their hand over. Like, Oliver Stone's like almost leaving filmmaking on the scale that he left it. From 86 to 99 is an unparalleled, unbelievable Oscar-winning run for him.
And your point is this movie is just as much about America.
Yes.
As JFK and Natural Born Killers.
100%.
Absolutely. Well, wouldn't Natural Born Killers, that would kind of be about the prison system. And it would kind of be about
media. It's about media. Big time.
So, I think, like, you know, that seems to be Stone's vibe. And you know, a lot of these dudes, these directors, they have opinions on media, and sports is no different. But I think that there's something that is like, I remember my first, when I got into acting, actually, I had a buddy of mine, this guy, Kevin Christie, and he always told me whenever he said, do you watch football? And I said, not really. And he's like, oh, you should start watching a couple games over the weekend because casting directors love to like talk about football every once in a while. And he wasn't wrong. I'd go into like a commercial audition and inevitably there'd be some guy who'd like, you know, want to ask me if I'd seen like, you know, the Bears game or, you know, the Packers game, or what'd you think of, you know, whatever. And it's just so sewn into the culture. And I think
we should take a minute just quickly to say fuck the Packers, but keep going.
I was a Green Bay Packers fan in my grade school years. I did not know what I was doing. Anyways, what I'm getting at is just like, you know, it seems like I bet Stone fucking loved making this movie because he probably got so much out of it.
He ate it up. He's the commentator.
That's hilarious.
He's having a ball being like the localized color commentator, not the national broadcaster's commentator, but the guy who commentates the Sharks every week. Like, that's a phenomena that happens in basketball locally. Now it's kind of relegated to radio, but like, that's so rare that and in parts of Sydney, we used to have it where there'd be certain Sydney commentators to Sydney games, but that like evolved out into like national broadcasts and things like that of games. But like, he's the guy who like commentates every one of these games because he's like a fan, and it's just really cool that it still exists in this movie, because that kind of almost died as this movie died, and he's giving that a bit of a throwback in this as well.
And also, like, so on the nose, he's like, here's my commentary. You know what I mean? Let me hang my dong on this.
That is what football. I love it. It's football.
I think it's important to talk about like the way he shoots the game, which I think was different at the time and is kind of taken for granted now. It's all, not all of it, but like a lot of it is so frenetic and within like a 10-yard, you know, bubble of awareness, and you're just kind of lost in these bodies. And so you get like a real feel for the stakes, the anxiety, the threat of these bodies coming at you and trying to do these things that are very, very hard. And I thought that was a tremendous thing that he brought to the filmmaking. And to your point about the changeover, like, I remember when I saw this movie, I was like, Jamie Foxx? Like,
right. Yeah. Like, okay. In Living Color. All right. Yeah.
I was like, okay. And like,
but he brings it.
We didn't know. He's fucking phenomenal
in this movie. Like,
phenomenal. And his monologue, like,
on the sports show is fucking out of control.
Yeah. And when he's talking, that is, he's amazing. And then that guy playing like Colin Cowherd, like the most annoying. But when he's talking about how he didn't play the game the right way with Coach D'Amato, and like how he took a suit and he lost six rounds in his draft, like, you don't know much about him until then, because Layla Rashan is gone, who is another incredible performance in there. And it's just a wonderful moment to figure out, like, yeah, what he's up against is pretty, pretty extreme, you know?
That whole sequence, I think we'll before we get into scenes that, like, and I'm sure this might come up, but that entire sequence that's intercut with the final scene of Ben-Hur as they're talking over their chili about football, about the position of quarterback, about exactly that. Like, you know, I took a suit. I went down six positions in the draft. Some, you know, one of your dumb peers thought I had quick feet. I'd make a good corner. I'm tackling 300 pound guys, all that stuff. It's like all of that is just absolutely fire, ending with that massive punctuation of like, you're a goddamn quarterback.
Then what the fuck was your life about anyway?
You're not some flash in the pan corner or receiver or even Julian Washington. You're a goddamn quarterback! You know what that means? It's the top spot, kid. It's the guy takes the fall. It's the guy everybody's looking at first, the leader of a team who will support you when they understand you. Who will break their ribs and their noses and their necks for you because they believe, because you make them believe. That's a quarterback.
It's just, it doesn't get better than this. Like the highs in Any Given Sunday. And I think that in a lot of movies that we talk about, you know, we can look back on them and, you know, have some objectivity because it's 20, you know, 20, sometimes 25, sometimes nearly 30 years later that we're looking back at these movies. But It is immense, the power that and the resonance that some of these things have when they hit their highs. Like I would pay money for some of the highs that this movie gives me on a regular basis. And we were spoilt in the 90s that like every second movie or movies, it's like the highs that it hits, it might not hit with you the whole time, but the heights of Any Given Sunday, the highs are no one hits that stratosphere. Like it's seriously that good.
You get that dopamine hit. The game gives you, that watching the game gives you, that cheering for the game gets you, that the bonus, you know, the player's bonus gets you, that getting the ticket to the game, it's there. That entertainment is there, you know.
The entertainment of it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I fully agree. And watching it, I definitely had a lot of memories of time. Yeah, just sports. That's the best way to put it. But you can't really, football has got this like, almost like it's fucking gnarly. It's just got this weird like paint over it, you know what I mean? It's like pornographic. It's fucking crazy. It's like, it's just I can't find the right words.
And we watch it like porn, and that's what I think Any Given Sunday gives you, is like there's that moment where Captain Jack running at the line and those two safeties are running towards him, and the fear that you get just implicitly, you're not even tracking it, but when you're inside his helmet running towards that line and you see these two monsters coming to just kill him, and you see his body spin like a top through the air as he gets hit from multiple directions, you're like, this is like football is actually insane. Like it's like,
that's something that hit is something that reminds me of a movie that doesn't flavor this football the way another movie we talked about, Last Boy Scout, does, which is Jerry Maguire, right? The Rod Tidwell hit and that hero story. Like Jerry Maguire does not touch on the corruption of the game. It talks about agents plenty. Yeah. Really. I mean, I guess it does a little bit with, but the corruption is so American and so all-encompassing, medical, spiritual, financial, you know, emotional corruption. It's everywhere in this film, and it's what makes it so pornographic, you know, like you're saying. So great.
When I'm in trouble, this is my playbook. I go to my playbook. Like when they lose and the priest comes in, I'm like, that in Australia never would happen in any locker room of any sport, but I can't get enough of it. There are no atheists in foxholes, right? Like that shit is exactly like if people are like not sure about what the thesis of the movie is, watch that scene. Like it knows exactly what it's saying.
Yeah, the word I looked for was thinking of right now. This movie is gratuitous. It is
Yes.
just like
Oh,
it,
yeah.
just full of it. And
And we love
I,
it.
we
Anyone is like, I want to see a movie that's more subtle. Go away. I'm done. Like, take yourself.
or don't go see an Oliver Stone movie.
Go
You
see
know what
it.
I mean?
I want the gratuity. That's why I'm in the house. That's why I
Yeah.
pay the money. That's exactly what I want every time. I want gratuity. Let's go.
Yeah.
So good.
Perfect, perfect
I
tip.
mean, when he the scenes that are so fucking fun and horrible to watch at the same time are like that charity event where like the fucking weird sex drama is playing out in the bathroom with the cocaine, and then like at the party when Beeman's talking shit and LT, you know, Shark
Says.
LeVay saws his fucking car. I have some respect, you know, and then the subtler fun and corruption is a performance that frankly is fantastic. And she was all but written off at this point, was Elizabeth Berkley as the
Oh,
high class escort. She's
amazing.
so alive and young and connected with an aging but great coach that tension is really fun and electric, and she's fucking awesome in the role and looks incredible, you know? And she gets no fucking props, man. It's like Showgirls. I mean, I know that there's a small, like, this is, I know we're not talking about Showgirls, but
But we
a Karina
can.
Longworth just did the thing,
We
you know, where
can
she
like we
finally
can
it
in
got
another
its just
episode.
desserts.
Yeah.
That movie's fucking phenomenal, and her performance in that is one of the like bravest, most committed, bold, fearless fucking performances in cinema history, and everyone wrote her off as bad. And it's like
Fuck
she
you.
was
Yeah.
directed this way. Look at what she does when Oliver Stone directs her. Like, she's great. Anyway, that's my Elizabeth Berkley slash corruption. Barkley, I don't even know how to fucking say
It's Berk. It's definitely Berkeley. All right, well, let's take a quick break, and then we're
okay.
going to come in and talk about our two favorite scenes.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Just as we come back from a break, and we sort of went into that last break talking about, as Rob would say, another great movie about America, Showgirls, from the absolute shitbag, the lovable shitbag, Paul Verhoeven, who has one of the best eyes, critical eyes of America in all of his incredible works. Let's start with a newbie to favorite scenes. Chris, as someone so fresh
Yeah.
to this, but also so incredibly hip to Stone and vibes like this. Obviously, JFK is a movie that is so deeply important to you. And thank you again, because that's probably my favorite episode we've ever done. Too much movie. You talking about that? So tell me about your favorite scenes in this one.
Oh God. We touched on a couple of them now, but I think one thing I really wanted to talk about in this movie is just how it changes. I guess, the most thing I was most impressed about is how it changes from the playing field up to the club, into the stands and giving the essence. I think just one of the things I want to touch on is just the essence of the game. I just felt
Yes.
so fully inside of it. When I was watching the opening of it, I was just taken in by the whole team. And as for like two favorite scenes, like I had like a couple specific ones. I loved like I kept on finding myself looking at the set design of all of these places because they just were so of that
Yeah, they weren't
era of
allowed to use
the 90s.
they weren't allowed to use the NFL, so they had to design all these teams, which is why I love, like, I think you can actually find them on like Etsy. Like, you can find a Miami Sharks t-shirt.
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, I've been like this close from buying a Miami Sharks t-shirt like so many times, because I'm like, that's my team. My
Well,
team's
yeah,
my
I don't
actual.
they
don't they don't they like play against the Crusaders or something?
Yeah,
Like, what's
yeah.
the team with like
I'm gonna
the
I gotta
Dale
find them.
Christian?
Last team. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
Oh yeah.
I think like I don't have two specific scenes, and I'm going to tell you the reason why I was kind of like railroaded by this movie, quite frankly, as I was watching it.
Before you're railroading, the Albuquerque, the Albuquerque Aztecs, California Crusaders, Chicago Rhinos, the Dallas Knights, the Colorado Blizzard, Houston Cattlemen, Kansas Twisters, LA Breakers, Minnesota Americans, New York Emperors, Oregon Pioneers, Orlando Crushers, San Francisco Knights, Seattle Prospects, Texas Rattlers, the Washington Lumbermen, and also the Wisconsin Icemen. So they're all the fictional teams. And of course, the Miami Sharks.
Yeah, I think like the ones that I wrote, these ones that just kind of like stuck out to me as I'm like going over my notes here. I'll just do these two, actually. I love the post-credit scene. It's fucking crazy. Like at the very end of the film.
Yes.
Like what a fucking crazy reveal. Like not to give it away for anyone who hasn't seen it.
No, we can spoil it. We can spoil it.
Not to win a big one. San Francisco sure took care of that for us, didn't it? In football, as in life, things change. So, I guess it's time for me to get the hell out of the way, bring in the new. I like Nick Crozier. I think he's going to do a great job. Nick. But most of all, I want to thank the people of Miami for their support over the last 20-some-odd years. Gee, it just flew by. It's really meant a lot to me. Yeah. It meant everything to me. I've had a great, great ride, believe me. And I'm gonna miss you.
He's an arrogant son of a bitch, but I'm gonna miss him.
But in thinking about change, I don't know, I felt maybe it was time for me to make a change too. And it was Willie Beeman taught me how to give it another shot. So, starting today, I'm gonna take over as head coach for that new expansion team in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the Aztecs. Why? Why do you say? Because they're giving me full management control, but hoping not to make a complete fool of myself out there. I just signed Willie Beeman as my starting quarterback and franchise player for the Aztecs. So Miss P, I'm looking forward to seeing you next season across those sidelines. So long. Au revoir. See you when the clouds come home. Special to you, baby. Smoking cigars on me.
Tony D'Amato is doing his press conference. Yeah, he's doing a press conference after being retired, in inverted commas, and he reveals that he's going to be the coach of the Albuquerque Aztecs, a new expansion team in the league, and that he's going to take Willie Beeman from the Miami Sharks as his franchise player.
And that he has full control over football operations.
Yeah. Yeah, it was such like a fantasy idea of like how you could run a team. But there, like, there was this one actor who's in it, John C. McGinley, plays the
cowherd,
the douchebag. He's got the cigar in his mouth. It's such like a cool fucking scene, and I really enjoyed that scene. And then I loved, this was just like, fuck, man. I'm just, there's too many of them. I loved Al Pacino drunk after talking to Elizabeth Berkley. I loved that scene, initially that you were talking about, but him like just like, it was such like, I felt the drunkenness he was going through in my stomach. I was like, oh, you're like,
when he leaves a voicemail for his ex-wife.
Yeah, and he's talking about how he's seen his kids and he's in this fucking crazy postmodern mansion. And I was just like, what is this movie? I'm going to just rapid fire a few because you guys will probably have more specific ones. I could watch Al Pacino and Margaret dancing drunkenly all night long at that party.
Now all we have are these know-it-all ESPN analyst.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, I've just been knighted.
Come on, Mom.
In the night.
Let's go.
Oh, no. What if we have to do? It's not late.
It's getting there.
Oh, I gotta give this back to you. And to reach the highest peak, but it doesn't thrill me half. We gotta do this again.
Let's do it tomorrow night.
Remember when my dad?
The whole party sequence was just genius. You know, yeah, that sex scene in there was where, like, basically, like, Bill Bellamy and LL Cool J, like, kiss. Like, it was just psycho. Man. Like,
yeah, dude.
But, I don't know, man. I'm going to just leave with, like, I love the zones of this movie. Like, for specific scenes, yeah, like, I definitely love the Pacino scenes. But, yeah, those ones definitely, like, just the vibe of it all stood out to me.
Rob.
Great scenes. I mean, that ending is probably one of the best epilogues ever. It's best. Like,
I might have to do an addendum episode of this and like rewatch it again, because like I just finished it like an hour ago, guys. So I'm just like,
it's a lot to take. It's too much to take in. We've asked you a big ask. This is too much to actually process everything in this movie.
I mean, I have one note here that just says that DMX track. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know. Oh, and like the track that Oliver Stone picks, he really shouldn't be like.
You cannot take this from me, baby.
It's so like sick. It's sick.
Sick.
It's sick.
Oh wait, one last one. Sorry, I gotta say this one. Endgame, when Cameron Diaz pulls Pacino into the fucking locker room, and then the whole team's like, oh fuck, because he's gonna trade.
Let's get out of here.
Oh, that seems
and Willie Beeman and comes in and goes, I'm sorry, Miss Pagniacci, but Coach already put me in.
So good.
And you're like, fuck, like, yes.
I'm like, let's fucking go.
Yeah.
I love that she doesn't fucking leave. Yeah. I love it. He's just like screaming, and she's like, no, Tony, like, you're fucking, this is my money. You're fucking with my money. You know what I mean?
I know.
No, those are all great, man. I mean, right, fuck. Sense. Yeah. For me, like, there's a couple scenes, like I said, that I remember since the first time I've seen it, which was like when Layla Rashan leaves him and he's insane, a fucking asshole. Yeah. The Shark LaVey monologue in this sauna.
Let me tell you something. For every suckle who leaves, for every Barry Sanders, for every Jerry Rice, that's 100 niggas you never even heard of. Sure, the game's taught you how to strut, how to talk shit, how to hit. What else? Suddenly there's no more money, no more women, no more applause. No more dream. This is what I'm trying to say to you, boy. When a man looks back on his life, he should be proud of all of it. Not just years he's been in the past and cleats. Not just memories of when he was great. You gotta learn that, Willie, here. Or if you don't, you ain't a man. You're just another punk.
Like, never forget.
That is that monologue in that. Oh my God.
King shit. He delivers it well. He has one look where he looks down and thinks the thought and then comes up and delivers a line. I'm like, damn, LT.
Oh, in the shower. When did,
like, this is the other thing. This is why casting is so imperative. And also sometimes I think people get unfairly smashed in their career about like just doing a really great work in a field impeccably. And I'm like, LT in this movie, because he's basically pouring out the innards of his diary in this performance.
His soul.
His soul is coming out. It's like, he's so penetrating and so amazing. It's like, this is something that should be recognized as like one of the all time crossover things of like a person who was an absolute superstar that comes into a completely new field and just crushes the fucking whole movie. Like without LT as Shark, this does not work. Without Jim Brown as the defensive coach, this movie doesn't work. It's like they are linchpins to it. And Stone casting them, it's just unbelievable.
Well, you know, it's a lot like, you know, I mean, it's not the same thing at all, but like knowing that Tom Cruise is jumping off the mountain on that fucking motorcycle lends a vibe. And like when Jim Brown is telling Tony that he wants to do something pure because everyone ruins the game and he's going to go, like, you look, Pat, you look back to all the good and bad movies Jim Brown did, but also the shit he put up with.
Yes.
On the field and off the field, one of the craziest times in American history to be an amazing, powerful person of his stature. Like, it's like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that degrades what I'm saying to compare him to Tom Cruise, but that the reality of the experience lends electricity to the feeling, you know, to the experience.
Well, also you rarely get performances, like where they can actually influence the part in a very meaningful way. You know, Jim Brown really has it all in his sleeve. You know, he's just share. Yeah, he was one of my favorites. Anyways,
anything else, Rob?
All those scenes I remember from the first watch, the slap and all that stuff. But the one that really and James Woods'
scene.
His exit is fucking amazing.
One of my players again. Come on, Tommy.
They couldn't take a piss in the morning without the pill. So
come on now. Okay. Out.
Oh, and now you're gonna play innocent, huh? Yeah. You know what? Fuck your innocence. And what about Bayer? What about Nielstrom and Manzicki? Logan and Krause?
All these years, have you? Have I will not have this discussion with you.
You don't want to hear the answer, Tommy? Don't ask the question. And you fucking snitch. Did you ever think about Shark putting food on the table or his kids going to college?
You lied to him. You didn't give him a choice. You gotta give him a choice. It's a doctor's ethics.
Yeah, since when?
The Hippocratic Oath.
Oath. You mean the one that starts, do no harm? With all due respect, doctor, I didn't have to ask him because I knew the answer. Who am I to tell these men they cannot live their dream? They will not live with shame like you. They are gladiators. They are warriors. And long ago, they made that choice. Not you, not you, not me. And I am not gonna take responsibility for standing between them. Didn't you ever have a dream, Ollie?
I'm living it hard.
But the scene today that twisted me up the most was when Shark and Modine and D'Amato and Jim Brown, is she in there?
No, it's
when they're all up.
Yeah, when they're in Tony's office. Yeah.
What are the odds? Well, there's no telling. It's a odontoid fracture. Basically, Luther, you broke your neck and it never healed correctly. Well, it's hard to predict this kind of thing, but what I can say is that the wrong kind of hit could result in paralysis, seizures, even sudden death.
What else is new?
In my opinion, he is not medically fit to play.
Right now, I need one sack and three more tackles. I get my bonus. Then we'll talk, okay, motherfucker? Come on, Luther. Have you ever seen an old punch-drunk boxer stumbling around, drooling, with no memory of what he's done in his life? You want that life, Luther? Coach, you need me against Texas, don't you? Don't you?
Of course I need you against Texas, but not at this price, no.
For $1 million, I would shake like a coconut on a tree if I got to. Coach, I gave you 13 years. You can give me one. Football's my life, Coach. It's my life. That's all I know how to do. Please, man.
You have to sign a waiver, Shark.
Bring it on, man. Bring it on.
Yeah, and you got to shut. And he's begs the coach, come on, coach, you got to sign a waiver. Like the integrity and emotion,
right?
Going like the fucking spheres of influence crossing and like fragmenting in that scene made me feel so out of control this time. Yeah. And I was like, it's just a scene in an office, but it's so important, you know. Yeah. It was crazy. So this time. That and then every time fucking Cameron Diaz is on screen, I was fully engaged. She's fucking phenomenal. And I just like, I know there's no place for women in the game and it's football and like all of that, but man, her point, everyone's point of view is so backed up in this movie. The bad points of view and the good points of view, even when LL Cool J is like, I want my fucking bonus, I need my yards, like it's justified. Everyone's point of view is justified. And her point of view is fucking justified in every scene. She's doing the best she can to grow her father's legacy, you know, in a way that is modern and in her own way. And like, I just think that character is fucking awesome. She killed it.
I'll be quick with my two scenes. The Tony's speech, Al Pacino's speech in the locker room is peerless sports cinema, and it's one of his best, very best performances that he's ever given. I think it speaks for itself.
3 minutes till the biggest battle of our professional lives all comes down to today. Either we heal as a team or we're gonna crumble. Inch by inch, play by play, till we're finished. We're in hell right now, gentlemen. Believe me. And we can stay here, get the shit kicked out of us, or we can fight our way back into the light. We can climb out of hell. 1 inch at a time. Now, I can't do it for you. I'm too old. I look around, I see these young faces, and I think, I mean, I made every wrong choice a middle-aged man can make. I pissed away all my money, believe it or not. I chased off anyone who's ever loved me. And lately, I can't even stand the face I see in a mirror. You know, when you get old in life, things get taken from you. I mean, that's part of life. But you only learn that when you start losing stuff. You find out life's this game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us. Hell yeah. They're in every break of the game, every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch. We claw with our fingernails for that inch. Because we know when we add up all those inches, that's gonna make the fucking difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying. I'll tell you this, in any fight, it's the guy who's willing to die who's gonna win that itch. And I know if I'm gonna have any life anymore, it's because I'm still willing to fight and die for that itch. Because that's what living is. The 6 inches in front of your face
Now, I can't make you do it. You gotta look at the guy next to you. Look into his eyes. Now, I think you're gonna see a guy who will go that inch with you.
Hell yeah.
You're gonna see a guy who will sacrifice himself for this team because he knows when it comes down to it, you're gonna do the same for him. That's a team, gentlemen. And either we heal now as a team, or we will die as individuals. That's football, guys. That's all it is. Now, what are you gonna do?
Oh, it starts so low.
So low. Just everything about it, the way he modulates it, and then the way it ends, and the tears and the intensity in the faces of all the people reacting is out of this world. It gives me goosebumps
between
just thinking about it.
Living and dying.
So good. The 6 inches in front of your face. Ugh. Love this movie so much.
Anyway, the room.
Yeah. So good. We could just go on.
You're right. That's the best scene in the movie.
It's the best scene in the movie. But when he calls, this is the Oliver Stone of it all. No one would do this. No one would make this choice. Tony calls a play, one of the final plays.
I feel like things are changing, you know?
Stampede on them.
Things are out of control. Maybe I'm just out of control. Sorry for the way that I've been behaving. It's all right.
And in the middle of that scene, he cuts to Anne Margaret and Cameron Diaz talking.
Yeah.
And she is like reflecting on how this game has toxified her spirit, how it's like infected her, how she's acted out of character because this is how she's had to survive in this environment. And on the screens and on the field that they've orchestrated, the scene of the movie is happening on screens and they are having a conversation. And that wild choice to me just exemplifies why he is a filmmaker. You said the word before, Rob, Chris, I think it might've been, which is electricity, or both of you guys talking about electricity of performance. The electricity of Oliver Stone is in that scene. Comanche throws that fucking amazing play. They react to it. We're seeing it unfold. It's cross-cutting. It's fading. We're seeing three things. And then they go down the sideline and then they react. And then we see him cut out. And it's like, oh, unselfish. He like punctuates that scene with, oh, unselfish. I fucking love this movie so much. And I love that scene so much. And I love just like anyone who's like, oh, Pacino, he's big, he's loud. Get out of here. I don't want to hear from you anymore. Get out of town. Like,
I don't
unselfish.
Care what you say. Yeah.
I don't care. Unselfish.
And it's best. And it's when he breaks from control and uses his guys the way they need to be used, which is at the end of the game, you give the ball to Michael Jordan.
Yes.
And you live and die on him shooting that fucking shot. I mean, he had Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
I do want to interrupt you too much, but that cutting away to her in that scene talking about it, I loved it from a character point of view. And finally connecting to her mother. But I did feel like fucking Oliver Stone kind of made her come to heel in that moment where it seems like she's absolutely confident and fierce in her fight. And then she's just like relegated to the fucking sidelines by NRA's greatest Charlton Heston. And
no,
you know,
I didn't read it like that. I read it like it was a moment of self-reflection. Like as in she's not relegated. She's like, what the fuck have I become? Like, why is this my life? And that's how I read it. And that's why I love her performance. Cause it's like in that moment, she stops being this dick swinging testosterone ego, all this shit that has infected her and starts going like, I'm a person. I don't even know if I like this. I don't know if I want to do this with my life. I don't need it. And her mom diminishing her earlier, like, oh, you should just, you know, get a holiday and whatever. Like all that great drunken Anne Margaret, like constantly drunk in this movie. all of that means something. But then she's just like, actually, no, do I need this? Do I want this? Do I want this to be my life? I like that. Because in the end, she also makes the decision that, no, it is going to be her life, but she's just going to learn how to play the game a little bit better. And that's what the epilogue tells
us. I like
us.
That. I like she that. Worked, I take that. I changed my mind. I like that, Reed. Yeah, I like that. Thank you. That made me like that moment a lot more. That's actually very beautiful.
Because then she immediately jumps out of her skin when they almost score a touchdown, which is also exactly. Like a great thing. It's no, this is who I am. Like, I actually am this. This is who I am.
And her like her aide de camp, that old dude with the veneers, is Johnny Russo, who is Carlo in The Godfather.
Yeah.
Right? The Connie's husband. Yeah. No, I love that. I love that. And thanks for pushing back on that, Blake. I think that is, you know, we finally got to see a private moment from her shared with her mother and get love in return from a parent, you know?
Yeah.
That's really beautiful. Thanks. I like that much better. I'm going to take that one.
All right. Well, let's,
what's your second one?
No, it's just the main scene. The scene.
It's a fucking great end, man.
I can't get enough of it.
For me, watching this, everything happened so quickly. I was like trying to hold on to all of the scenes. Quite frankly, because I remember all of these as you're talking about them, but he cuts so quickly throughout this whole film and it moves along so quickly. It's what, 2 hours and 37 minutes?
Yeah, it is. Let's have a look. The theatrical cut. I don't know if this is the right. It's 2 hours and 42 minutes, Chris. It's nearly three hours.
Yeah, it's long. Mine was only 37 minutes. Okay, so
maybe this is the director's cut. But yeah, it's long.
Anyways, yeah, the ballet that it was playing between the field and the box was like insane for me. And I just was, you know, from someone who's been in those circumstances where you're in a box watching a football team play, you know, it was just like, oh shit, there's so much going on right now. And that's what I loved about this film. It's always kind of blown my mind about football, like how many eyeballs are on that one play. The eyeball scene. Oh my God.
The eyeball scene is out of this world.
That's like pure psycho Oliver Stone, though. That's like just him being like, yeah, there's a fucking eyeball on the field.
I know I tweeted this, but like Bill Bellamy looking in the mirror before the game saying, I'm the best wide receiver that's ever lived. I can catch anything. I'm the best receiver that's ever lived. That's right. It's like such a great, I never stopped thinking of that for 25 years. And like, he doesn't get a lot to do in the movie, but it's such a beautiful moment of what these guys have to do to exist in this system, or they're just wiped, you know? It's a beautiful moment. I loved it.
God, also, we're seamlessly pivoting into favorite performers in this, but like, has LL Cool J ever been better than Julian when he's standing there in his like Michael Jordan 90s oversized suit bitching about, Coach, I love the plays that you called that I love. Like, is he any better in any other movie? I don't think so.
No, he's perfect in this film. I mean, he just, again, I think it goes back to what I was initially saying earlier. Like, every actor just in fucking inflated their characters in the perfect way.
Yes.
Like, they took the direction and they just gave their full ego to it. And it was really cool to watch. And LL Cool J was a great example of that, because you can only imagine a performer like that is fully, like, I mean, he's just on another level. So it's, like, crazy to see him play a football player.
He's great. I mean, he looks the part. He's looked the part since, you know, 1986. And, like, it's another instance of, like, though it's not football specific, of bringing your outside influence into your role. Like, we immediately buy this kind of like pop star-esque running back showboat, you know.
That's a great point, though. Sorry to cut you off, but I have to get this in. Like, everybody you believe, you don't look at them as the actors, you look at them as cogs in this wheel. Every character, you buy them, like, you know. And the whole time I was watching this, I'm like, oh, there's Lauren Holly. Oh, fuck, you know, Matthew Modine, Jamie, you know, I kept on doing that. But like,
they just melted into their characters, and that was what was so impressive about this movie to me.
I love the casting of Modine and James Woods together. I just love it so much because it's like Modine has a soul and Woods is a snake, and it's like they're just perfect because they have like similar features. They have like there's certain things, and you look at them together and you're like, oh, they could almost like be related or something like that. But he's like, didn't you ever have a dream, Ollie? And he goes, I'm living it, Harv.
I'm living it, Harv.
Also, real quick,
such
too,
a fucking scalpel of a line.
Yeah, I'm living it, Harv.
Like,
there is,
and also, like when he walks away,
he's saying like, to his
20-year-old girlfriend is like, "I'm gonna stay here." Fine, fuck you then.
There was a very cool, like, also in the eyeball scene, I have this note written down. He cuts to like 500 all-seeing eyes at that point. Yeah. Like, there's such
I want to see your notes, like eyeball scene, and it's just like note to self: stop jizzing. You know, yeah. Like, just one more thing about this eyeball scene: jizz.
Oh,
cut
on,
that,
man.
Obviously. Sorry, I said that.
I think we're nearly at time. I think unlike most of our other episodes, like we've almost like sold every line that is great in this, like short of reading the whole speech. So I don't think we can really do that. But I would just say, like, I'm like when Jamie Foxx calls her Miss Pagnici, hey Miss Pagnici, you really do it to me. I just can't get enough of that. And she's like, oh, it's Pagnacci. And she walks away and she looks so amazing and hot and formidable. And he looks so funny in his little jockstrap. It's an amazing line and an amazing scene that is orchestrated around it. One of my favorite lines.
I have the craziest lines written down just so you guys know.
Oh, please do.
I want to know those lines. I love how she doesn't step on him there. Just the way Tony doesn't step on him either when, you know, he's a little bit out of control and in his own ego, which, you know, sorry, I got a big head back there in the huddle, you know, but like she is kind to him in that incredibly unprofessional moment, you know, because she understands like swagger is what is the name of the game, you know. Go ahead, hit me with these lines, Chris. I can't wait.
Okay, these are all rapid fire. I will start with just these three. When Pagnici and Pacino are talking, they will get together, handshake, have a beer. And then she turns around, she goes, fucking beer? That scene was fucking crazy.
I don't drink beer, Tony.
Yeah. I don't drink fucking beer?
Fucking beer.
Okay. This scene fucking knocked me on my ass. I'm between marriages. What do you do for dick? That was a crazy scene.
To and that old ass lady.
The old lady.
The old lady's like, whoa. And then, yeah, I mean, there's a ton, but this one I just really like caught me for whatever reason when they're on the airplane together and he's like, what are you listening to? He's like, Trick Daddy, you know him? And he's like, yeah.
You like jazz?
Like jazz starts talking about jazz. It's like, oh my God, this fucking scene is crazy.
It's like every baby boom white guy who thinks he's down is going to throw the fucking Coltrane at you.
Exactly. Yeah, Trick Daddy.
He was great.
Yeah.
I do love this line, Chris, speaking of like crazy lines. Cindy, can you please speak to that nurse? I'm a football player. We're going to pump up the volume here.
Yeah. That's a great accent, dude.
Cindy, can you please speak to that nurse? Love it. Great line.
Oh, yeah, that's when he... Oh, fuck, dude. Yeah, anyways, those are just the ones I had written down. I'm sure you guys have more poignant ones than I do.
No, I mean, you know, for folks who are listening, they know how I, like, edit the clips, and obviously we'll bring you the highlights as we're going along, but we're trying to give you the full picture because we don't want to say that this movie is just one speech, but it's so iconic and so towering that it's, like, hard. It's as much the same as we did with Devil's Advocate, right? It's like the movie has so much to offer, has so many weird and wonderful nooks and crannies to explore, some really cool shit, some baddie stuff, some Tony Gilroy all-timer lines. But that speech at the end is just so towering that it's like, it's almost hard to talk about other stuff in the movie when you mention it. So Rob, any more weird and wonderful ones that you've got outside that line?
No, I mean, that Harv line is great. And to that speech is like, Tony really finds the truth of his whole life in that moment. And you watch the realization over dialogue, and it's fucking beautiful. You know, it's great. It's great. It's not a pump up speech. You know, it's like, and Beeman tells him, like, you're shitty at this. Yeah. So he comes in with something new, and he's just like, I pissed away all my money. I've fucking chased away everybody who ever loved me. Oh. You know, and that house, by the way, that talk about a dead tech postmodernistic bullshit piece of shit.
Like that
bullshit house.
It was like,
it's like,
he's a Miami football coach. It's like, it's so right. The house is so wrong, but the house is so right.
All the cigars in the fucking world live on Airbnb that house, you know?
Dude, also there's one scene when he goes to the house to see Peg Michi, and all of a sudden he just has a cigar in his hand. You know what I mean? There's so many scenes where just people roll in with fucking big old stogies. I was like, what is going on here?
Well, gentlemen, I'm going to look into your eyes, and I know that I've got two guys here who will go that inch with me on these movies. Thank you so much again for everyone listening to Too Much Movie. We love you. Check out links in the show notes if you want to follow Chris or Rob on the socials. And we're planning and orchestrating, and as with every episode, identifying new movies in the 90s like Showgirls that could be potential for us to cover. We're staying in the 90s. This is such a fruitful patch of movies. Gents, this has been so fun talking to you about this. And Chris, I can't wait. I can't wait for you to have another watch of this. And if you do, we've got to promise the gang we'll get back together so you and Rob can go line for line and give us dueling Pacinos again. Promises for like to do this speech together. That's what I really want. I think, you know.
An inch! An inch! An inch! The inch!
The inch!
Inch! Give me an inch!
Going inch for inch, line for line. Love you guys. This has been super fun.
Thanks, guys.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.